get to work outside from the federal government.
There's billions and billions more if you start to dig into how some of these interacting with people.
Those are really the skills that we're looking for,
and creating opportunities for new jobs, really creating opportunities, as you alluded to, for people to retrofit their homes to do energy efficiency.
We want diversity in our workforce.
It's going to change the way that the U.S. plays on global
The following positions are open at various locations. So we talk about park rangers. So what's the difference between like a park ranger or a parks and recreation specialist?
With other countries, but it also means something about
those positions are very similar. But what I would say, the main difference is that you'll see a park ranger maybe focus more in on educating the public about certain rules and regulations, or providing that maybe that visitor service.
This is something that really matters
service,
for our day-to-day lives.
And information I want to people. Rangers are kind of they're always attractive
this,
for folks.
Obviously, a huge piece of legislation that was passed by the Democratic majorities in Congress last year, signed by President Biden. It's going to be one of his signature pieces of legislation passed. Kind of, you know, it was the pieces of the Build Back Better deal, the massive Build Back Better deal. Much of it did not make it into the Inflation Reduction Act, but much of it did.
Where you are listening to us right now,
so I think it's really important to take a closer look at these issues, because the name Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, let's be honest, it's not really what this bill is mostly about.
For the summer.
And you're talking about a lot of the climate and clean energy components of this. Let's bring that home a little bit. How is that going
to
impact us here in the state of Wisconsin?
Right there. Get more information. Every
place across the country has positions are super seasonal.
It's for the summer.
You know, that they've had for years and decades.
Opportunity for retirees.
Is a huge,
I really do. Who like people and like, you know, sharing their knowledge. And I just think that would be such a wonderful
advantage.
I think this is pretty well known too. Socialization as you get older remains critically important.
There's lots of growth opportunities.
I think it helps you live longer when you interact with people and you see different people on a daily basis. And it keeps you sharp, and it just is, it's good for you.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, and as Wisconsin
I would say that
we're in kind of a period of economic flux in this state, where we've had traditionally dominated by the manufacturing sector, but obviously that has been in decline for a couple decades now, at least. And as Wisconsin kind of tries to figure out its path forward, legislation like this can open up some opportunities for what that next step.
Who's the DNR Deputy Bureau Director of Parks and Recreation Management? And how often for people who maybe start, like you said, some of the younger folks,
I don't think
who are
anybody
college students,
that the manufacturing
who start a seasonal job, how much
does this
potential bug, and this is something that turns into like a long career? Maybe not with the DNR, because there's not an open position, but knowing that they want to work in parks, state parks, or some outdoors, is that kind of a feeder program and how people kind of get into it?
And Wisconsin. I think the big question is, this sort of remains to be seen, to what degree do a lot of these companies decide to build facilities here in Wisconsin, or I mentioned Michigan, or do they go to places
customer service, park ranger, park rec specialist, labor as well. So, it helped to grab me and keep me interested.
You know, in some places in the Midwest, like Tennessee, Georgia, they're getting a lot of investment as well. Equipment. So that's an interesting question to see how that plays out.
If there are people like me who could be lured into this,
these competitions between the states for these types of things. You know, I think we had a
good question.
Interesting example. Last year, year before, something like that, where the federal decision to drive around, build new
commercial lawnmowers,
build new trucks for the U.S. Postal Service. That contract ended up, Oshkosh Truck got that contract. Instead of building it in Wisconsin, they ended up building those, starting a new plant in South Carolina to build those. So it's going to be interesting to see if this creates another situation where you have kind of a number of these states with different labor laws or tax incentives or other requirements, really competing with each other to try and get some of these take advantage of some of these opportunities with the Inflation Reduction Act.
For those that have the aptitude for it and are excited to learn.
All right, so we are talking with Justin Worland. He's with Time Magazine. He's giving a keynote speech at Discovery World in Milwaukee tomorrow on a clean energy event hosted by WIS Politics and WIS Business.
For people who are not looking for a job, but who are very much
what are some of the other things with this? With this law about
enjoy the
how
state parks.
One of the things that mentioned with this is it's going to change how we heat and cool our homes in a lot of ways. What are some
of the
different
things
impacts
that
this can have on everyday folks in their homes?
But what are some of the things I guess the consumers of the parks instead of the workers of the parks? I feel like people should know as we it doesn't look like spring right now, but soon enough, and we're getting there.
There's thousands of dollars of incentives that homeowners can take advantage of.
You can actually book 11 months in advance.
Heat pumps
and a lot of our campsites,
electric vehicles,
for the weekends you might expect are heavily booked
use case to actually attach.
There's still openings across the state
power
on weekends and most definitely during the weekdays as well. But definitely encourage you to go and seek those opportunities that exist out there. And there's always cancellations.
Where I came from,
even at our most popular parks, there's
people
have changes that they need to make in
tax cancellations.
They
take advantage of from the federal government, but they also can lower energy costs.
Because I'm obsessed now with the park ranger and I have. How much leeway do they have?
Wrote this
because I'm thinking of when I've gone to the Tower of London and you have your docent who takes you around and they embellish some stories. So if I were to become a park ranger for the Wisconsin DNR,
interested in because I'm a homeowner in a very in an old house on the west side of Milwaukee. Not the most
clippers?
Energy efficient place to live. Got some old windows. Got some old HVAC type stuff in the house. Like that, so I think there's a lot of old housing stock in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, we did learn from National Park Services recently. Do not push your slower friend down when being chased by a bear.
Not good.
Is there other advice?
Absolutely.
I know that the National Park Service is very good at giving very obvious advice, but as far as obvious advice for Wisconsin state parks, anything else?
I think I need to be learning more
very few things that can harm
what exactly this can offer us homeowners across Wisconsin, just the larger
food away. So
larger big picture of kind of how this
are the
very big, important, snarly law is going to impact people at the ground level. So we're coming up close to a break here. Justin, you are going
to
stick with us for another segment. If you have any questions about maybe how this law could impact you, feel free to give us a call.
This month, he is
give us a call
to Michigan
at 844-967-2789. Again, that's 844-967-2789.
Cool.
Justin Worland from Time Magazine is going to be joining us for one more segment after the break here. Again, I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm filling in for Kristen Bry, and we will be right back after the break. Stick with us.
So that's WISC.JOBS. They can go there, they can do a search, and they'll kind of walk you through how to apply.
Perfect. And we'll put that on today's show notes for anyone who's interested. Brian Hefty, DNR, Deputy Bureau Director of Parks and Recreation Management. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right.
kids. They're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Likely 31. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow night. Chance of snow showers. Lows level off around 13. A dusting of snow tomorrow.
Welcome back for to Asgo's Media. Wisconsin. I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in for Kristen Bry. Who is off today?
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
So that's pretty cool. Go check that out over on the Asgo's Wisconsin Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and all the different places you find Kristen's work over the course of the week. We are joined for this segment by Justin Warland, who is a journalist at Time Magazine, and he is also giving a keynote speech tomorrow, I believe, at Discovery World in Milwaukee, talking about the Inflation Reduction Act and clean energy, climate change, all sorts of issues wrapped up in that big bill. So for this next segment, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the implementation of that. So that bill got passed last year.
And it really makes me, you know, as the process,
these processes take a while.
Pretty mellow,
so what happens next as this begins to be implemented, you know, on a federal level, on a state level? You know, what should people be paying attention to
as this big important piece of legislation begins to become a reality for our parks? That I've always liked the outdoors. We weren't a camping family.
No, the Inflation Reduction Act, and now at least is implemented through a range of different federal agencies.
And I'm good for like 2 days.
It requires 2 to 3 days, from and the then private I need sector, an actual state and I participation. So it really, we have the thing that you look for first is to see how agencies are crafting the rules.
I just think for retirees, what a great sort of a wide job. Berth, how much fun would that sort
of, I hadn't thought of that. I always think like I was thinking more of the side of so a lot of that is like college students, teachers,
in places like the Treasury Department,
senior citizens.
Happening
fun.
In places totally
like the Department of Energy, EPA, etc.
I think, you know,
from
put
an average from a consumer perspective, you know, a lot of those rules are being crafted, as I said, at the Treasury Department. So rules about what kind of tax incentives, you know, what tax incentives look like.
Once I prove my value, and, I think as a lawnmower,
some of that is, we've gotten some of the first drafts of that, and we're going to continue to see more come down the pipe.
We still have this segment, but
as I said, part of this is,
that his name?
That is his name.
of tax incentives, you know, what tax incentives look like. You know, that's some of that is we've gotten some of the sort of first drafts of that, and we're going to continue to see more come down the pike. As I said, part of this is, you know, the private sector in some cases has to take advantage of the tax incentives, things like clean energy tax incentives, you know, for sort of utility scale renewables, or also, you know, there are new technologies like hydrogen, et cetera, that the private sector has to buy into. And then, you know, some there are some programs that states will, you know, participate in. This is actually from the bipartisan infrastructure law, but that kind of gets looped in with the Inflation Reduction Act. There's, you know, say every state has submitted plans for how they're going to build an electric vehicle network, charging network in their state, and how they can get federal funds from that. So it takes a lot of different players to kind of come together and turn this thing into something that achieves its objectives.
Yeah, to what extent is this kind of following the same process that we saw play out with the bipartisan infrastructure law?
Yeah, it's similar in many ways and different in other ways. I mean, I think the big difference is the emphasis on the private sector and private sector uptake. I mean, this is you know, less about building roads and bridges, charging networks, et cetera, things that the government builds. And to, you know, I think largely, almost entirely about things that the private sector will build. So part of that is, you know, if there's a consumer incentive, if there's a, you know, if the government's going to pay for solar panels on your roof or for, you know, energy efficient housing, clearly the private sector is going to provide that because the incentive is there. Part of it is, though, you know, even with things like hydrogen, as I alluded to, or some of these other technologies, there still has to be, you know, the private sector has to believe they can make money off of it, even with these incentives. So I would say that's sort of a difference. Having said that, the two are designed to work together, right? So the bipartisan infrastructure law provides funding to upgrade the grid. That's really critical if you're going to build out clean energy, which is something that the private sector would build. So the two work together, but they're also different.
Yeah, and we've got a big climate change issue to tackle in this country going forward, and we have not really had, you know, the infrastructure in place to be able to do that, and this kind of allows that opportunity, you know, in a really meaningful way, and you know, we're seeing some of those effects, we're seeing some of those changes, you know, and people don't always think of Wisconsin as a place that is going to be necessarily impacted greatly by climate change. Just look at the recent winter that we've had, though. We've had a very mild winter. Great Lakes, we're going to get a lot more rain, precipitation going forward. So we're going to be impacted by this in a lot of ways, but also just economically to address some of these issues and find, you know, better energy solutions going forward. And this bill, you know, opens up some opportunities for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a sort of climate perspective, I think it's important to think, you know, okay, I was actually on a panel with the governor Walz of Minnesota last week, and he was talking about how Duluth was named the safest place to be, you know, in a climate apocalypse. And I don't want to overemphasize that, you know, Wisconsin is probably not going to be, you know, turned into a flooded place like Florida, but at the same time, like as you said, there are impacts for agriculture, and you don't want to miss the sort of bigger picture, which is that the world is changing, industry is changing. There are going to be all sorts of things like migration that changes. So no place is an island, right? And Wisconsin will be affected. Having said that, it's also a really good opportunity, as we were saying earlier. It's an opportunity for new industry. It's an opportunity to really prepare for this 21st century economy.
Justin Warland, journalist from Time Magazine, is going to be giving the keynote speech tomorrow at Discovery World in Milwaukee in an event presented by WisPolitics and WisBusiness. Really interesting stuff. I'm fascinated to see kind of how this really once the rubber meets the road, I think that's when things get interesting with a lot of these big bills like that. So I'm interested to see kind of what happens going forward. So Justin, thank you so much for joining us. I encourage people to check out your keynote speech tomorrow in Milwaukee if they have the opportunity. And when we get back from the break after this, we're going to be joined by Patty Vasquez, who's going to be talking to us about our neighbors to the south in Illinois and about the mayor's race in Chicago. So stick with us for that one. Justin, thank you again for joining us. But great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child.
It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history.
My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest dare host to dream for today. With us. We've made it to the last half hour of the show, and I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest, the host and producer of Driving It Home on WCPT 820 AM, and a lifelong Chicagoan, Patty Vasquez. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Millions of kids.
I am so excited. Thank you for having me.
So hungry kids get sick more often.
You're usually my guest.
And can struggle in school.
That's right. So we're switching things up for today because I am a regular guest on your show. Where you have me join the show every Wednesday on Driving It Home to talk about all the craziness that is happening in Wisconsin politics. So now I'm turning the tables on you because we got to bring you on here so we can talk about all the craziness that's happening in Chicago politics. So before we jump into the conversation here, we have been kind of focusing on mayoral elections throughout the show. So in the first hour of the show, we had Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's involved with
local politics
in Green Bay. She was telling us about the mayoral election in Green Bay. We were joined by Scott Gordon of Tone Madison. He was telling us about the mayoral election happening in Madison. We've also got a mayoral election happening south of the border. Yep. In Chicago, and I think it's really important for us in Wisconsin to be paying attention to this election as well, because it is an important race for our just a neighboring state. It is an important race, I think, for the whole Midwest, because I think Chicago is such an important piece of our regional economy for so many things. So what's and with the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, I've been focusing so much on that I haven't had a whole lot of time to pay a lot of attention to what's happening in the race for mayor of Chicago. So what's going on down there?
Well, in relation to the fact that, how it affects Wisconsin, I mean, this is also a big labor race because Paul Vallis, wherever he has gone, has worked to diminish the rights of teachers, the ability to bargain and have access to representation. I mean, in Philadelphia, in New Orleans, pretty much everywhere he's gone, he has opened more charter schools. In New Orleans, after Katrina, he went in, did his work, and it's almost entirely charter schools. I don't think people realize this. It's almost entirely charter schools in New Orleans right now. And during the pandemic, Paul Vallis talked a lot about how we've got to break the contract. If they're not going to go back into the schools, you know, we've got to make sure that our teachers aren't getting homeschooled. He connected a lot of what was happening during the pandemic with violence in Chicago to kids not being in school. And it was rough. It's pretty rough. And then you have Brandon Johnson, who is a former Chicago public teacher, a Cook County commissioner. He has been on the record after George Floyd is saying, you know, we need to defund the police. He's trying to figure out that space now. So you really have kind of the two ends of the political spectrum in Chicago. We have a lot of conservatives here, especially in neighborhoods like where I live, where there's a lot of cops and firefighters. And I also live near a lot of teachers. So I think it really reflects, where we are as a city right now. We are bumping heads with each other, what it means to have safe streets, what it means to have quality and free education. So it's kind of the perfect battle in many ways. And I'm really concerned about the direction we're going in.
Yeah, it's an interesting race. Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson emerged from this primary. So you have Lori Lightfoot, the incumbent mayor, who did not make the runoff, did not make the final ballot. So she will be a one-term mayor. So, you know, essentially making it an open race for mayor of Chicago. And you have kind of the two candidates, from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, who are kind of farthest apart on the political spectrum among the candidates that were running. So you had Lori Lightfoot, you had Congressman Chuy Garcia, who both came up short. I was kind of surprised that Garcia, just having a little bit of national profile, that he didn't do as well as he did. But you have these two candidates, probably the farthest apart of any of the two candidates running in the primary, and you have a real contrast on the ballot on April 4th, the same day we're going to be voting here in Wisconsin as well.
See, this is why you're an excellent guest, because when I talk to you, you give all that background and the context, whereas I'm in it every day and I'm like, here's where Vallis is and here's where Brandon Johnson is. But, you know, so there were nine candidates in it was our general election, so we don't do primaries. And here is a little bit of background. After Harold Washington became the first Black mayor of Chicago, the conservative Democrats in Chicago looked to the Dixiecrats and were like, how do they do it down there in order to preserve the sort of more conservative element. So they eliminated primaries. There is no, you know, Democrat running against a Republican anymore. You pretty much everyone says they're a Democrat in order to even compete. And that's how we end up with the general. And then if someone is not able to win it outright with 50+1, we end up with a runoff. And to go, and this is the second runoff since 2015. So back to Chuy García, who did run against Rahm Emanuel in 2015, forced him into a runoff. And really, that was that song you played at the beginning about there was an election and nobody showed up. It hovered around the low 20% of people that showed up and reelected Rahm Emanuel. The problem with Chuy García's campaign was that he came in so late. I mean, after petitions were already circulating, I think there might have only been 3 weeks left. Vallis had announced a year ago, I think in April of 22. Brandon Johnson announced in the fall after that. So it was, and he had already locked up the support of CTU, which is one of the most powerful unions in the city. Paul Vallis was on his way to locking up FOP. And here's the thing about Vallis was that he has, and he talks a lot about this, he brags about his relationships with the police department. He says, you know, I negotiated their contract. The police department did not have contract for over, I want to say, maybe 3 years. It was quite a long time. They did not have a contract at the end of Rahm Emanuel's term and going into Lori Lightfoot's. And he says, I did it for free. Did you? Did you do it for free when you then get the endorsement and the full support of the Chicago Police Department? That doesn't seem like it's free to me.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, maybe a little bit of quid pro quo going on there. Is that what you're suggesting? I don't know.
Yeah, 1,000% quid
pro quo. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking to Patty Vasquez about the race for mayor of Chicago. I know this show is called As Goes Wisconsin, but we are paying attention to what's going on with our neighbors in Chicago because we want there to be a thriving, growing Chicago as well. And I think, you know, you mentioned something at the outset that there are, you know, Chicago always thought of as a very Democratic city, and it, of course, is. But there, you know, just based on the numbers of how many people live in the city of Chicago, you're going to have a lot of conservatives there. You're going to have a lot of, you know, Republican-aligned voters. And I think about this with Milwaukee as well, because, you know, Milwaukee is so much bigger than every other city in the state that the number one, you know, the most Trump votes for any municipality in Wisconsin came from Milwaukee. And just because it's 25%, you know, 25% of the city is going to vote Republican, that's still a huge chunk of the city. So, you know, we had a situation with our mayoral election a year ago in Milwaukee where, you know, we had a primary and basically the Republican candidate who's now a state representative, Republican state representative working in Madison, Bob Donovan, he's basically a Republican. So he got about 25% of the vote once we finally got past the primary and Cavalier Johnson got that kind of really a huge number, more than 70% of the vote to win a full term as mayor. So is that a similar dynamic to what's happening in Chicago? Are there, you know, is the expectation that a lot of the more, you know, progressive, liberally aligned candidates are going to rally behind Brandon Johnson, or are people kind of split there depending on kind of who they had been supporting?
That is something that has been concerning me for the last couple weeks. I talked to a Democrat that I've been working with for over a decade. I advocate for families that have an individual in their family with disabilities and I don't want to name their name because I was very disappointed when they told me that they would be voting for Vallis. So Vallis seems to be drawing on Republicans, 1,000% there. I'm going to say that I should stop saying that because nothing is 1,000, but he is drawing on Republican support. And I'm not just saying that. He's getting all kinds of attention on Fox News. Conservatives across the country, talk show hosts are definitely salivating at the idea of a very conservative, I guess he's saying he's a Democrat, taking over Chicago, a pro-police, anti-teacher, teachers union candidate taking over the city. And the thing that I watch, and so I ran for office in 2020. So I have a somewhat of a handle on my neighborhood. You know, I am a progressive, but I also grew up around a lot of cops and firefighters, and they kind of, you know, many of them supported me. The candidate who did win was even more progressive than I am, at least on paper. So I have, and then we also, there was a cop in the race. So in a three-way race, I got 38% of the vote. And the reason I mention that is because I have an idea of what voter turnout can be like. And that was right when the pandemic was starting. In this general election, 42% of my ward showed up. And most of them, the majority of them voted for Paul Vallis. I think it was like 75% voted for Paul Vallis. Like Lori Lightfoot got 5.7%. Brandon maybe got like 7%, somewhere in those numbers. And that's unsettling. The wards north of me and a little bit west of me came out in similar numbers, 45%, when the city turnout was like 36%. So that tells you that there's a higher turnout. There was a lot of motivation to vote against Lori Lightfoot. There was a lot of motivation to vote for Paul Vallis. So it's not just a vote against somebody, but they had someone that they want to get in there. And you can see it with all the signs, like our alderman, also very conservative, basically had Trump rallies in front of the police station a couple of years ago. So, and another thing, that's as far as conservatives in my community, 52% in 2016 for Trump, 50 in Chicago.
In Chicago.
And if you folded the map with the south side of Chicago with Mount Greenwood, which also has a lot of cops and firefighters, similar numbers. And these are and another thing is to remember that we are one of the most segregated cities in the country. So you have predominantly white. My neighborhood, when I went door knocking as a candidate, my husband could hear me because I had a Bluetooth in just to have someone like with me. And he could hear in the tone of my voice, he would say, do not hug that black person because there are so few. My tone of voice would be like, hey, I'm so happy you're here. It must be so hard. Because there were only six. There were six from September through March. I only had six black people answer the door in my neighborhood. That's it. So that's going to play a big part of this. Racism is going to play a part in this. Conservatism in my neighborhood is going to play a big part. Public safety. And by public safety, that's a dog whistle a lot of times for, you know, the black people are causing a lot of crime.
Yeah.
Really. Neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just as conservatives across the country like to talk about Chicago, conservatives in no matter where your community, they're gonna in Wisconsin always scapegoating Milwaukee. We know what a lot of these coded terms, yes, that our friends on some of the other talk radio stations in the region here like to use for some of the problems that Milwaukee's facing. I imagine a fairly similar dynamic, yeah, happening in Chicago. We're talking to Patty Vasquez, who is the host of Driving It Home on Driving It Home on WCPT 820 AM, lifelong Chicagoan. She's going to be joining us for one more segment here. So after the break, we're going to be continuing to talk about what's going on in the Chicago mayor's race. Is the top issue in the race their relationship with Wisconsin and Milwaukee? Has that come up at all?
Look, abortion has come up. So sure. It's kind of part of the conversation.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of the conversation. Maybe some more Wisconsin residents moving to Chicago if things go a certain way, if things go sideways.
That's why we're trying to organize Fibs for Wisconsin and help Janet Protasiewicz win.
That's right. Well, see, I've been pretty good so far, not having our producer run over to the beep button. So I'm not gonna make him work any harder than he has to with talking about the fibs or the fish or the fish tabs. If anyone knows what a fish tab is, call in the show because I think that's a fun one. So we're gonna be continuing to talk with Patty after the break here. About the race for mayor in Chicago between Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson. Fascinating race happening just across the border in Wisconsin. How much time we got before the break here, Calvin? Just one more minute. Okay. So I have to imagine if one other thing that the Chicagoans must be paying attention to happening in Wisconsin right now is whether Aaron Rodgers is going to be in the division going next year. So that's something that we've been monitoring on the show today as well, because this could, you know, anything could happen at any time with Aaron Rodgers potentially getting traded to the Jets. I have to imagine the Chicago fans are ready to see him go.
Well, you know, we're going to be the Arlington Heights Bears soon. So we're not really, I'm not as invested as I used to be. So I wish you the best.
Yeah, that's right. The Arlington Heights Bears against Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. Boy, that's going to be a little weird. All right. Well, stick with us. We're going to be continuing this conversation after the break. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in as your guest host today on As Goes Wisconsin. Kristen is off, but you can find Kristen's content on Instagram, where she's been promoted by Julia Louis-Dreyfus today. That's pretty fun. So stick with us. We're going to keep talking after the break. We'll be right back.
Weather on this snowy day could be brought to us by your business. Can you imagine how many ice augers and fishing shanties are being bought as we speak? Weather sponsorships make the phone ring. Call us at 608-819-8255.
Here comes the sun, and I say it's all right.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host today. If you're unfamiliar with me and my work, I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. I'm also a regular contributor to Heartland Signal and a regular guest on WCPT 820 with Patty Vasquez, who is our guest here today. She hosts the Driving at Home radio show in Chicago, and I go on her show every week to talk about their crazy neighbors to the north and whatever wild insanity that Wisconsin Republicans are bringing to the news cycle on elections and whatever else. We've been talking a lot about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race lately. So I decided we should turn the tables a little bit today with me guest hosting the show and have Patty join us so she can tell us about our goofy neighbors to the south and about what's going on with their race for mayor, because they have an election the same day that we do. Again, reminder, April 4th, less than 3 weeks away. Early voting, early absentee, in-person absentee voting, less than a week away, starts in the state of Wisconsin. So be ready to vote and be ready to flip that Wisconsin Supreme Court. But Patty is telling us a little bit about what's been happening, about the race for mayor in Chicago. So what have been some of the big things happening lately? And you said you wanted to talk a little bit about what was going on with the impact of social media on this race. So what's going on here?
Sure. So Paul Vallis let me put it this way. He ran in 2019. So he was in that big race. We had 11 candidates. And, you know, this is something that, again, with ranked choice voting, we're talking a lot about that in Illinois now. We're looking at that as a possibility in our state legislature. Lori Lightfoot made it out of that first round in the general election with about 17% of the vote. Tony Preckwinkle, who was the other runoff candidate, had about 16%. So nobody had anywhere near a majority. I contend that when you have too many choices, people choose nothing. I think suppressed the voter turnout. But the day after that election, I mean, I'm not saying like that, I don't have the exact date, but really quite quickly, Paul Vallis started to be a part of a lot of neighborhood groups. We're just starting to talk about this on my show where people are calling in. They're like, yeah, I remember him being on my neighborhood chats. So like anytime there was violence, he was amplifying that in neighborhood groups and how the police are being handcuffed and hamstringed and we're not letting them do their jobs. He was courting the police support the minute he lost in 2019. And we see that. And he also started speaking at conferences and events that were held by a group called Awake Illinois, which is one of these parents' choice, parents' freedoms groups. And
not woke Illinois, just to be awake.
Awake.
Yes.
No, it's awake. Okay. It's that sort of sarcastic, well, if you're woke, we're awake.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're a book banning group. They're an anti-trans group. They call the governor a groomer. They're very aggressive. They have gained a lot of momentum. They were very involved in the gubernatorial race, trying to elect Darren Bailey, who I don't know if you remember, but after the Highland Park shooting, the 4th of July parade where several people lost their lives and a young boy had his spinal cord severed. And his name is Cooper. And I had the, experience of working with Cooper a little bit because my son and he were in the hospital at the same time. Beautiful little boy whose life has been altered so dramatically and catastrophically, and of course lives that were lost, and just the trauma of it all. And within less than I think 2 hours, Darren Bailey appeared with his campaign signs and a whole group of people. You know, that was very tragic. Now it's time to celebrate. Like, that's the kind of tone, because they didn't want to talk anything about gun violence. They didn't want that to be the conversation. And Awake Illinois was very involved in holding fundraisers, elevating him. And Paul Vallis appeared at some, like, not just appeared, he was on their promotions as a speaker for school choice, for what kids should be taught, about public safety. And so all of that is out there. And this is the maddening part of any race, right? Where you're like, but you just, like, we talked about this with Ron Johnson, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can say the craziest things and he's like, that's not what I meant. Or, you know, that was then, or a lie is not a lie kind of stuff. And so that's what we're seeing with Paul Vallis. Now, Brandon Johnson has some of the language that can be divisive, you know, with defund the police. And And, you know, there's a misunderstanding of what that push was for. We have programs in Illinois now in Chicago where we do send out trauma responders, social workers that go out for domestic violence situations, mental health situations. And that was, you know, unfortunately, the language of defund the police was not reallocate or, you know, where our priorities are, which would also keep police safe. If we are approaching these situations with an impactful intention, then we are keeping them safe as well. But Paul Vallis has been, I would say it's very much in the conservative right-wing vein of driving a message home. And he was very deliberate and precise with it for over 3 years. And now we're seeing the outcome of that.
And from what I understand, he's more or less the front runner in this race, right? He's the favorite to win. Or I mean, I hesitate to you know, make any mm-hmm. characterizations of a race that I'm not particularly familiar with.
For those who can't see us, I'm massaging I clench my jaw so much. I am hopeful that the grassroots efforts all over the city of Chicago will, first of all, we need voter turnout. We need to find voters who aren't registered. We need to get young people involved, because that was the lowest turnout that I've seen in a long time. 18 to 24 year olds, I think it hovered around less than 10% wow. for voter turnout amongst young people. I think that they're engaged on the national level, but in Chicago, it's very low numbers.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillo.